Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. I'm really happy to have my next guest on because I've had a lot of fun going through her new book. And, you know, when you were growing up, maybe you had a favorite dish or you loved to eat that was passed down in your family. I certainly did. My mother made a cassoulet that was just outstanding. She made some other things as well. And I tell you what, B.J. Carpenter, her family had lots of things to pass down to her. She's a food educator. In fact, she turned into a food educator, writer, and author. Her latest book, Come, You Taste, Family Recipes from the Iron Range. And she's going to help us explore the culinary record of that area, plus talk about how food is a language we all kind of understand. And we'll take a look at the recipes. And hope you'll join in. What are the recipes that were kind of passed down from your family? Some favorites there, some experiences to share? I hope you'll join us. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We'd love to hear from you. B.J. Carpenter, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Well, it's good to talk with you, Larry. And cassoulet, that's pretty impressive.
Oh, so good. It was so good. I miss that a lot. And there's a restaurant in Door County that makes a cassoulet that's almost as good as my mother's.
Really?
We grew up on a farm. I was in a farm family, and she had access to duck and all the rest of it, you know, that goes into, and she would do it the old-fashioned way, the slow way, and it was really always very, very good. Well, your book is sure a lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I went through every chapter, and I picked out a recipe that I'm going to try.
Okay.
And every chapter, and so we'll talk about those, but we can talk about others as well, but first, give us some background on the Iron Range, and we're talking about the Iron Range of Minnesota. What is the Iron Range?
Well, the Iron Range is an area that spans from the west in the Crosby, Ironton area all the way up to Ely, and it was where the richest vein of iron was discovered in the late 1800s, and it was the discovery of the iron ore that brought all the immigrants to work in the mines,
and you say, so many nationalities.
Over 44 are documented.
And so, what that means for food is kind of significant for that area.
Very, very much so. Yes.
So, I really kind of liked your reasoning that you talk about in your book for why you wrote the book. So maybe you could explain that to us.
Well, I grew up with immigrant grandparents and immigrant neighbors all around me, and my parents being first generation. And there were no fast foods, and people didn't go out to restaurants a lot. So we made the food at home and grew the produce in our yards and in our gardens, and everyone's father hunted and fished, and it was just always fascinating to me to go to my grandmother's house or my great aunt's farm and be in the barn with the cows or watch them making bread and cooking on a wood stove, and I loved it. And then as I grew up, I'd go visit my kitchens of my playmates and their grandmothers. And I was of an English, Scotch-Irish, and Swede-Finn background, and they might be Slovenian, Serbian, Italian. And they had food in their kitchens that we didn't have in ours, and it was very fascinating.
And you've captured... you've captured a lot of wonderful sounding recipes, none of which I've tried yet, but I have identified several of them to try. But, you know, early in the book, you call food a language everybody understands. Maybe you want to expand on that before we take some calls and talk some more about some of the specific stories in your book.
Well, everybody has to eat, you know, and these were all poor immigrants, and they'd have big gardens in their backyards, and in some cases, and I remember this as a child, some of the front yards were totally dedicated to vegetables as well, and people would share vegetables and produce across the fences, and the women would, you know, have their coffee klatches and bring baked goods and share recipes and ideas, and it was, you know, it is a universal language.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And Tim in Madison's North Side, I'll get to you in just a second here, but I wanted to go to that first chapter because that kind of intrigued me. You started your book with a chapter on bread, and mm-hmm. there's one in particular I wanted to talk about. But why did you choose to start the book with a chapter on bread?
Well, it's bread's pretty universal. Every culture has bread. Some that are very identifiable, specific to their culture. Others are pretty universal, but everybody has bread. And it's like a communion every day at your family table.
And I'm telling you, bread that's homemade, home-baked, oh.
You can't, yeah. There's nothing better than that.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah, I'll talk some more about that. But I want to give Tim in north of Madison a chance to join us. Tim, hi. Thank you for calling.
How are you? This sounds like it's going to be a great show.
Oh, I hope so. Thank you.
By the way, I'm not from Madison. That's 89 miles surrounded by reality. I'm on the road north of Madison.
Oh, okay.
My great aunt had a German potato salad that everybody in the family makes and everybody raves about it. And I think she probably got the recipe from her mother. And the funny part of the story is that when people wanted the recipe, she didn't actually know it. So one day her husband watched her make it. And he wrote down the ingredients, and that's why everybody has the recipe now.
Oh.
It's 3 pounds. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, give it to us quickly.
Okay, we use 3 pounds of red potatoes. You can get the salad potatoes, but I just get the smaller reds in a 5-pound bag and pull out 3 pounds and use them. You boil the potatoes down till you want to keep them solid, though. And then once they're still solid and cooked, just take them off the stove and start cooling them down in water, and I keep changing the water out. Then the side ingredients are 1.5 cups of water, 1/2 cup of apple cider vinegar. So I take a 2-cup container and just fill it with the water and vinegar.
Yep.
1 cup of sugar. Now, this recipe is not for anybody with diabetes. 1 cup of sugar, 1/4 cup of flour, 1/2 pound of bacon, and then the recipe also says onion. Now, I use maybe 1/2 small onion. And then it's salt and pepper to taste. While the potatoes are cooling down, they'll have to be peeled, by the way, after they're cold. What I do is I cook the bacon, and then you take the bacon, once it's browned and almost crisp, out of the grease and set it aside in a dish or whatever. And then you add the flour, 1/4 cup of flour, to the bacon grease. And then you also dice. The bacon, by the way, is diced before
yeah.
you start.
Yeah.
The onion is diced, you put that in the bacon grease and brown it, and then you add the flour, 1/4 cup of flour, and you stir that until it starts to thicken. Now, they said do it until it gets clear, but it never does get clear. But it dissolves. Once that happens, then you add the water and the vinegar, and you just keep stirring that on good high heat or medium heat. Mm-hmm. Then you add the sugar, and the whole thing will dissolve, and eventually it'll get thick, like gravy.
And then go to the potatoes.
And then, yeah, you can set that aside or just keep stirring it. In the meantime, you want to peel the potatoes and then slice them. And then the trick now is to put them in a colander or a strainer underneath hot water and rinse them. That gets rid of that starch so they don't stick together.
Uh-huh.
And then you simply... put the potatoes back in the pan, and you add the
other ingredients.
The other ingredient, and fold it in, and it's excellent potato salad, and it'll keep in the refrigerator for weeks because of the vinegar.
Well, there you go. Now, obviously, Tim has, you know, this is a family recipe, and this is the kind of thing, BJ, that you talk about in your book.
Right, yeah. And, but it sounds like Tim, you know, he's got it down, and it's more than recipe, it's technique.
Yeah, I like the fact that he got the technique going. I wish you'd, I got almost a lot of it, I got almost all of it written down. Tim, I wish you'd shoot us an email when you get back, or put it up on our, post it up on our Facebook page of those, entire process, and we'll post it up, and I'll let people know that, because I'm sure, German potato salad was something that I always loved. And, you know, I grew up in a community of a lot of Germans, and so German potato salad. I don't know if it really originated in Germany or not. Do you know, BJ?
I don't, but I've seen it in German cookbooks.
Oh, okay.
So
all right.
I could assume.
Yeah. So there it is. Well, German potato salad. We've got. Bread. I want to go back to bread for a minute, because I took a look at that whole wheat bread recipe that's in, you know, there are many breads that you have, but I chose that one because it fairly quick and easy.
The lazy day summer whole wheat bread?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is very easy. And it's, you know, as the title says, it's all put together quite quickly, basically in one container. The key, and they didn't have this available to them back in the early part of the last century, but using the instant quick rise yeast, which is available in grocery stores now, and also the molasses, because molasses has the ability to help bread rise, particularly if you're using, you know, whole grain flour, which doesn't have the gluten content that white flour does. But it's very simple. It's kind of a foolproof, no fail.
Yeah, see, that's what I like to look at. When I saw that, I thought, even you, Larry, can make this bread. we'll talk about that. Maybe talk about that bread some more. We'll talk about a lot of other things, because there's breakfast meal to talk about, and dinner, and Ting Town, I want to talk about that place as well. But first, a look at the news. You stay with us. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at a new book out. It's called Come, You Taste, Family Recipes from the Iron Range. That's the Iron Range of Minnesota. And BJ Carpenter, our guest, she's the author. She's a culinary instructor. She writes a lot, works out of the Twin Cities area, and fun to have her with us as we talk about her book. And, of course, hear from you. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share, join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Why talk about the Iron Range of Minnesota? Well, as she was telling us earlier, there are more than 40 nationalities that come to Minnesota's Iron Range, or came to Minnesota's Iron Range at the beginning of the 20th century. And so they brought a whole range of recipes that sort of make up the culinary language, I guess you could say, of that part of the state. And it ranges from lutefisk to Fatigman, is that a way to pronounce it? Fatigman?
Fatiman.
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 Fatiman. What the heck is Fatiman?
Fatiman is found in Norway and Danish cuisines, and it's usually at Christmas time. It's kind of a peppery cookie that's got a little bit of a rise to it, and it's not very, very sweet.
Well, that's there's a pretty broad range of things in your cookbook, that's for sure. Lynn on Facebook wondered about lutefisk, and you do have a lutefisk, talk about lutefisk in your book.
Right.
She's got some in her freezer and wonders if she should How should she make it? I don't think she knows how to make it. She was thinking about cream cod on biscuits.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah, why not?
That would be really good on biscuits. You know, typically it's served with boiled potatoes or mashed. And it can be done slowly in the oven. It doesn't have to be, you know, it's gotten a bad rap. Let's put it that way.
Well, some of that's well earned. It's probably the result of some of especially some of the church dinners.
Right.
Where it just got to be, I participated in one or two of those, but I wasn't really happy with the lutefisk.
Well, it's a texture thing, I think, Larry.
Yeah, it's kind of jelly.
That people object to, and also the smell of the aging cod is not necessarily great. But if it's done right and it's all in the cream sauce. If you do a nice cream sauce that has lots of minced onion in it that's been, you know, simmered, it will make up for a lot.
You know, we always, at these dinners, there are a couple of things that I look forward to that are also you also talk about in your book. One was lefse.
Right.
Which I'd make a meal on the lefse. And the Swedish meatballs.
Oh yes, that was standard in our family on Christmas Eve.
Okay,
we always had Swedish meatballs.
Well, the Swedish meatballs and the lefse were what I usually ate when I went to one of the church dinners. That was a lutefisk dinner.
Uh-huh.
I could make a meal on the Swedish meatballs and the lefse for sure. Lefse, is it that hard to make?
It's not that hard to make. It's as I say in the book, there's all sorts of lefse tools and gadgets, and I didn't actually include a recipe because it's so readily available in the grocery stores.
Yeah,
but it is a good. It's the sort of thing that's good to make as a group. You know, like multi-generational.
So grandma and mom and daughter or son all sit together and make it. What are the utensils that you need that you normally wouldn't have?
Well, you don't really need to get specialized utensils, but they have a certain smaller rolling pins, and then there is one. One thing that's helpful, it's a long, flat, very narrow, if you took a wooden dowel and flattened it out, and that is to slide under the crepe. I call it a crepe because that's what it's like.
Yeah.
And then flip it on the griddle.
Oh, okay. So you need something kind of long and obviously thin.
Thin, right.
But not too wide.
Not too wide.
Okay.
And it's rigid. It's not a flexible spatula.
Well, I know that I guess I could try to make it, but it's so readily available. You can get lefse. Can you buy good lefse in the store?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's one that I did not select in mine because I thought, you know what, I can get lefse in the store, so I'm not, you know, that was kind of one reason why I was, well, give me the whole wheat bread, and then I'm going to go for breakfast, which was the next chapter in your book, and breakfast, there are a couple of things I liked there. The Swedish pancakes, which I've never made, but I always like Swedish pancakes, maybe because it always comes with lingonberry sauce. As I looked at your recipe, it doesn't look that hard to make.
The pancakes or the lingonberries?
Well, the pancakes. The lingonberries are another story.
Right. No, it's an easy. That again is like a crepe recipe almost. It's very thin and it cooks very quickly.
And I think you say in your book that, you know, it's sort of like making pancakes. You know, if you don't make pancakes very often, like the first couple, you know, just oftentimes are not exactly what you want. But as you point out in your book, along about the third one or so, you're doing a pretty good job with them.
Right. You know, and that's especially true with a thin pancake like that. It's, you know, your heat might not be right up to where you need it to be on the pan, or it might be too hot, so it just takes a little regulating.
Yeah, I like to use an iron cast iron pan to do them, but to do pancakes. But you know, sometimes one of those electric griddles where you can adjust the heat exactly is kind of nice as well.
Oh, those are nice.
And I should mention that in your book, you can talk about that you have adjusted these recipes. Tell us how you have adjusted them, sort of, I suppose, for modern day.
Well, as I was saying earlier, with the quick rise yeast and high gluten flour that weren't readily available to people back, 70 years ago, many other convenient, ingredients that we have, such as in the bread recipe that you mentioned, it calls for buttermilk, and you can buy dehydrated buttermilk, which you reconstitute, and instead of buying a whole quart for when you only need a cup or so. And also, when I was doing research for the recipes at the Minnesota Historical Society, I was looking at a lot of, you know, family recipes and church cookbooks, and there were some sketchy directions and and, you know, ingredients left out. So I did test these all, and you know, tried to get the directions so that they could be easily, all the recipes could be easily made by cooks and non-cooks alike.
Grandma Mueller always made a great whole wheat bread, and I know my brother, we always tried to figure out how to make it, and my brother Dennis sat and watched her make batches of it, but it is never really exactly the way Grandma Mueller made it.
Well, there's the food memory that includes, you know, smell and ambiance, and it will never quite be the same as when Grandma made it. I grew up with soft-boiled eggs that only my grandma could make for me. I've never been able to replicate those in my life. So,
well, there we go. Lynn in Coloma has something for us. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for calling.
Hi. This has been so much fun. I just made a batch of sourdough rye bread this morning. But my thing was, what I called, we call them lefse flippers, and they're decorative, and they hang on our wall. But what my girlfriend and I came up with as two screwy Norwegians is, after Christmas Eve, when we've got the leftover Swedish meatballs, then we take them and we make our lefse. And it's very easy. It's really potatoes and flour and salt, and you squish it flat, and you just cook it on, well, I do the iron skillet thing, and I've got a flat one because I do pannekoker from Iceland as well. And but anyway, then you use your lefse flipper, and then what we do is we made Norwegian burritos the next day.
Oh.
And we all get together so we take the leftover gravy, the leftover mashed potatoes, the leftover Swedish meatballs, and we make Norwegian burritos out of them.
That sounds great.
It is a lot of fun, and we all laugh and giggle and eat up all of our leftovers.
I love that idea, Lynn.
And the lefse flippers are really beautiful. I mean, mine is from my grandfather's mother, who was born in, my grandfather was born in Bergen, Norway. But they're, we hang it on the wall for the rest of the year when we're not making lefse. So
As a reminder, and what do they look like?
It's like she described. It's long and it's flat, but our handles are decorated beautifully with rose marling. So,
okay.
I have one that sounds exactly like that hanging on my kitchen wall.
And you know, I find I make it in the summertime because when people are making these wraps and these fancy wraps and they go to the grocery store and they've got sulfates and all this stuff in them, right. I just go ahead and make my own, and I make lefse and we just make our own wraps.
There you go.
Leftover mashed potatoes. So there you
right.
go.
Yeah.
Well, I like the way you think, Lynn. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man.
And that's very true of all the people that I interviewed and wrote about. You know, you didn't waste anything. It always, you know, leftovers always found their way into something else.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you on that. Bonnie in Superior has something. Let's go there. Bonnie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about South Americans. My friend is from the range, and her family has worked in the mines, and she talks lovingly about South Americans, which apparently is put up in canning jars and used to be taken to the mines for lunches or something to that effect.
They would be found in miners' lunch pails, but primarily what they were... South Americans.
What are they?
They are like a very spicy, sloppy Joe.
Ooh.
And it was bar food. And you can still find it in the bars. And it was on the eastern end of the Iron Range. So from the Eveleth going toward Ely area. And all the recipes that I came across made gallons. You know, they called for 5 pounds of pork and 5 pounds of tomatoes and 5 pounds of peppers and onions and 5 pounds of beef. So I did scale it back so it would be more approachable for a home kitchen. But it has...
Did I miss that? Is that in your book?
It is in the book, yes.
Ah! How did I miss that?
It's right after, right after the pasty recipe, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Or very close. Tradition tells that miners would go to the bars. They would have these readily available, and they were served on soft white bread to line their stomachs before an evening of serious imbibing, or as a morning after cure-all. They could also get... go back and have a breakfast to quell the effects of the night before.
So there you go, Bonnie.
Thanks. Any idea why they're called South Americans?
No idea. I asked, and nobody seems to know. And how, you know, South Americans ended up on the Iron Range. That's the...
That's a mystery, and it will remain a mystery, although there may be somebody who will call in and say, oh, I know how that happened.
Well, I hope someone does, because I'd like to know how it happened.
Okay. Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, that's another one for me to make, I guess. Let's go to Judith in Lafarge. Hi, Judith. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hello. It just reminded me so much of my early days. In my early 20s, I lived in Lordsburg, New Mexico, which is about 20 miles from the Mexican border. And I had some wonderful women that taught me how to cook, and they taught me tortillas. So after I'd come back to Wisconsin that Christmas, I sent them lapsa. And speaking kind of your other subject, they sent me back thank you cards, and they said, we are now making your Wisconsin potato tortillas. And they loved it. I treasure that thought. So,
Thanks for sharing that. That's fun, isn't it? How things get spread around and happen sometimes.
That's right. You know, it's I have a pasty recipe in there in the book, and one of the sidebars was a listing of the variations that the different church ladies would make and bring to the mines to sell. You know, it's a Cornish dish, but took on, you know, the Italians made it one way, the Swedes made it another way, the Finns made it another way, and it became universal.
There we go. Judith, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. We have Randy in North Sauk County next. Randy, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I love the show because my grandparents on my dad's side were Dutch. They did speak German, but they were actually Dutch as we've gone back to their sort of homeland a time or two. And my grandmother she cooked several things that nobody else did. But when I got to where they were from, overseas, it all made sense. She did things like when she made bread, an ingredient would be the yolks of eggs that she would have boiled, dried, actually froze dry them. Sometimes she let them sit out in the garage when it was freezing. And then that powdery yolk was a component in her bread, and it would make the bread. Now, she called it rusk bread, but it was not hard. It was soft and sort of sweet, and she also ground her own wheat. We had a little grinder that every child had to grind until Grandpa finally put a little motor on it. And she would actually wash the wheat and dry it in kind of a screen and then use that. And that bread was like candy. Just you could not possibly... a matter of fact, for Christmas, I would later, when I went to college, I would say, oh, Grandma, just make me a couple loaves of bread. And if I took it to college, if I took it to the school, it wouldn't last, you know...
very, very long. Oh, Randy, thank you. That's a great story. And it kind of goes to the sort of what you talk about in your book, the great, wonderful stories of the recipes. All your recipes, you have stories about them. And you know what? Linda in Madison. Linda, can you do this quickly? Have you got some information for us on South Americans?
I might, because I know Anthony Bourdain and his brother went to South America to try and figure out why one of their ancestors left Europe and was there. And they never really quite pinned down why, but I'm thinking people follow a book where it was. And when you made enough money or got bored or family required you to move closer to them, then you move. So perhaps somebody had been in South America and then brought it back or the recipe.
And there you go. Thank you, Linda, for calling. Here we are. We're out of time, just about out of time here. Thanks a lot for it. It's probably, Linda's probably got it right, BJ.
I would say, you know, that's very likely they came to work in the mines.
Because people came from all over the place. Well, you know, I never got to the Denver sandwiches, or I never got to the potato rutabaga souffle. That's one I'm going to make because I like rutabagas. And Grandma Carlson's blueberry crunch. And we do have a few recipes up, don't we, Brianne, on our Facebook page? We got one or two up, a couple up. Yeah, we've got a couple up from your book. And thanks a lot, by the way, for letting us do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, BJ, it's been so much fun talking with you today. And I'll shoot you a note when I make that bread. Excuse me.
And
let you know how it turned out, because I want to give it a try. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. And it was my pleasure.
BJ Carpenter's book is called Come, You Taste. It's Come, You Taste. Family Recipes from the Iron Range. And I've got at least one recipe from each chapter of the book, which is more than I normally get out of a new cookbook. So... if I get one, good recipe, it's worth the money of the cost of the book. And in this case, I think I'm going to get more than that. So I'm looking forward to trying it. And Just to let you know, what are we going to talk about tomorrow? Tomorrow at this time, we'll take a look at wetlands and the water community in Wisconsin and the Wetlands Science Conference that's coming up. So more to talk about with wetlands. Thank you so much for being with us. Stay with us, Lots in Store on the Ideas Net.
Imagine not being able to read a letter from your child's teacher or fill out a job application. One in three adults in Wisconsin struggle with basic literacy. All this week, Wisconsin Life introduces you to people learning to read, write, and comprehend.
They kind of brought me in the office and made me feel like an illiterate dummy that can't read blueprints.
Literacy in Wisconsin, all this week on Central Time.
Support for WPR is provided by the Eduardo Neal Silva Young Artists Fund. In memory of his dedication to young performers, Eduardo Neal Silva was a respected educator at the University of Wisconsin and dedicated listener to WPR. Support also comes from Creative Energy Designs, specializing in window coverings for every budget, and creator of the Window Warmer Insulated Roman Shade, dedicated to enhancing beauty while reducing energy costs. Creative Energy Designs.